Welcome to this episode of the Pharmaceutical Executive Podcast. My name is Miranda Schmalfus, an editor with Pharmaceutical Executive. On this week's episode, I speak with Jennifer Butler, Chief Commercial Officer of Pleo. Jennifer and I discuss the significant threat of misinformation to public health and how emotional appeal plays a part in its influence, where patients are turning for trustworthy health information, the pharmaceutical industry's role in ensuring patient access to that trustworthy health information, the trend of turning to peer-to-patient platforms as well as trusted patient communities, and much more. So without further ado, Jen, thanks for joining me.
Oh, my pleasure.
So what kind of threat is misinformation to public health?
I have to say, nowadays, it's a huge threat. Back in 2021, former Surgeon General Murthy published a report about confronting health misinformation, and this was 4 years ago. He acknowledged at that point, and this was coming off of COVID and the pandemic, the role of misinformation in causing confusion and anxiety and growing mistrust with patients and the population and the impact that can have over public health efforts. He raised concern in this report about the changing information environment. And at the time, 4 years ago, he was really focusing on the social media outlets that we have in place and the fact that engaging content is really emotionally driven. And therefore, there's opinions behind it. In this report, there is a reference to a study that 70% of false news is shared more often than true news because it has that appeal. And while this is not about fake news, I think that can lend itself to health information also, because it's really important for patients when they're feeling vulnerable to be able to find information and not question. And as you're questioning information, you start to get more anxious and overwhelmed about what's coming next. Fast forward from where we were 4 years ago to today with the impact and prevalence of TikTok and AI. And we've just ignited where former Surgeon General Murthy was starting with his view of this surge of misinformation for patients. It's really tricky. It's too easy for patients to go into their feeds and start finding patients like them in their feeds or hearing influencers. And no matter what you Google or search for in these forums, you're going to find opinions. And that it's the tricky part is it's comforting. It's comforting to see patients like yourself offering opinions. And I think there is a great wealth of awareness that can be raised. But information and validated information can't be trusted upon opinions. And I think that's where it's a slippery slope. So when you add in TikTok and AI, again, shows amazing opportunity for information collection, information seekers, but we know that AI also has quote unquote hallucinations that you don't know what information you're getting back is credible. So it's wonderful to have access to all this information. I mean, at least patients aren't in the dark like we were maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago, but we also have to make sure that we know how to handle the information that's coming our way and be able to separate fact from opinion.
I absolutely agree with that. I think that there's so much on social media now, and it's kind of a double-edged sword because you can have those conversations and you can read all of those opinions. But I really feel like in many instances, you can just find information, whether it be validated or regulated or not, that'll fit the narrative that you're looking for.
Exactly. And then that starts to fall into your feeds and your algorithms, and it's reinforcing. So it's a slippery slope as far as you want to go in a direction in information seeking, but you're the one directing it and you have to make sure that you're also checking yourself.
Yeah, I say this to my mom all the time. Being an educated consumer has never been more important than where we are right now.
Completely.
On that subject, where can patients find trustworthy health information and what kind of strategies do you think they should be using to verify information?
I mean, and it's so traditional, but it still stands true. I mean, I'm on my Instagram feed. You know, I'm going to get information through social media feeds, but to verify and fact check, it's so important to go directly to the source. So if you're coming through a diagnosis with a condition, and you're kind of seeing and hearing feeds that are coming through on your Instagram or TikTok, and you get some perspectives, go directly to the sources of the health systems. There's so many health systems that have amazing sources out there, like the Cleveland Clinic, Mayo Clinic, Kaiser Permanente, Penn Medicine. I mean, even if you just Google and your diagnosis, and what I also want to stress is that what pops up on the top of your search is going to are sponsored ads too, and sponsored content. So make sure you scroll down until you get to those validated sources. And there's so many great sources out there. I have to say that health literacy has been a big topic, and I think a lot of these health systems have played into it nicely and recognizing the way that we do absorb information as well. I used to work in my foray into health care. I oversaw marketing for commercial population and for health plan in the Boston area. And I can say that while you don't turn to your health plans, there are a lot of health plans have great sources of information as well that are validated by medical teams. And same with the health systems. For medication, when you have medication and you're seeking information on medication specifically, you might not think of it, but your pharma brands and the sites and your manufacturers have also a great resource of information. Patients don't necessarily seek out pharma, but they have the same medical teams in place to publish information and validate the content. And as much as we don't like to hear all the ISI mumble jumbo, and when we hear the information coming through, think of it more as like a stamp of validation that it's a credit information that's coming your way, so that you don't have to second guess it. And I think, that's where it's a blend. You want to be aware and find out what people are, you're going to seek out other people and patients' opinions. But when you want to really get the facts on symptoms, diagnosis, treatment, medications, go directly to the source.
It's interesting that you mentioned health literacy because I think that in the age of social media that we're in right now, being health literate also means being media literate if that's where you're getting
Oh,
your information from. Because
yeah.
my mom wouldn't know going on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it. She wouldn't know the difference between a blue and a gold check mark, knowing that the people that have blue check marks now, they pay for that. So anybody can be verified. Versus, somebody, I don't have a check mark, but our brand does. There's a difference in that, and there's a certain level of, okay, this one has a gold check mark, so this is 100% for sure bona fide certified. This is who this is, where you get a lot of, and I'll just use him as an example, where for President Trump's tag, it'll be president and then it'll say TRU and then have two N's and then a P. And then they'll buy the blue check mark. People don't know that that's not necessarily him,
Right.
but they do that with, with Beyonce with two E's. People don't think,
Right.
people don't
Right.
think to do the legwork with that. And I thought that's very sticky water. There's sticky stuff to get into, rather.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially with AI and the proliferation of this as well, you just don't know. You have to make sure you're validating your sources and understanding, to your point, the health. I think that's a brilliant comment that you made as far as the media literacy and health literacy is really coming to a convergence. And I think that's where education is needed to support patients and understanding the different ways of finding validated information.
Absolutely. So, and this happens a lot online, and it's opened up the possibility to have those conversations. There seems to be a lot of skepticism over any new therapies that come to market. Can you
Yeah.
share some insights on best practices about a new prescription or medical device?
Yeah, I'll share. I mean, the practice is again traditional and very basic, but I'll go into a little bit more explanation behind it is, but I mean, go to your trusted healthcare provider with a new medication and therapy and questions. That's, absolutely the number one golden rule. But that's not always accessible to everybody. And your time with your healthcare provider is sometimes limited. But you just want to make sure that you're validating the new therapies, new approaches beyond what you're hearing in whatever TikTok or AI generated content that you're reacting to. I'll use GLP-1s as an example, because I think recently, and what I didn't mention earlier in this is, GLP-1s is kind of that next surgence of why are we, I think of massive misinformation, amazing miracle drug that it will have a huge impact on public health. But we have to make sure that the right patients are receiving the right diagnosis with the right medications. There's a lot of, I went on TikTok just to look at the fact there are over a dozen categories of GLP-1 discussions going on in videos and ways to find out information. There's also information out there that could be misleading regarding where to access GLP-1s and the compounding GLP-1 sites that you can now access the medications from and get it so far more easily, but not recognizing that there's false claims out there that these compounds have FDA approval. And these are really important facts, again, versus the opinions of others that might be on these that need to be verified. And JAMA actually just published in January on their health forum a letter acknowledging that this is becoming a concern as well with patients going through the compound sites. Again, just being aware and educated as a patient, as you said before, having kind of that consumer education approach to your as a patient. I mean, patients are people, consumers, we're consuming healthcare. We need to make sure that we're putting the right approaches in place. So I mentioned JAMA. They're a great resource as well. Tons of research. Health literacy might be a little bit elevated in some of the research that they put out there, but you can at least get extracts and summaries as well of their research reports.
Great. So what role can or should pharma play in helping to ensure patients have access to to health insights that they can trust? I had a conversation previously, a week or two ago with Ian Bayer of Sooth, and I said to him, I would love to see pharmaceutical brands be in these groups
Yeah.
and talking to patients. I mean, we talk about data. Why? You have a bunch of people that are in a Facebook group that are willingly talking about how they feel about your medications. Isn't that's free data to use? And you can go back to your team with that, right?
It's amazing, and I think there's such a fine line that pharma's figuring out when you're referring to online patient communities. And I've spoken to a couple online patient communities, and because when we're looking at kind of peer-to-patient and peer-to-peer platforms, if pharma has to make sure that they're supporting patients with education and content that's been MLR approved, and that they're supporting patients that's not necessarily attracting and encouraging adverse event reporting. So I think there's and it's a very tricky line, and I agree with you, like go to where the patients are talking, support them with the facts. We just have to be careful with the way that we've set up our requirements as well. Because what we hear, and the whole power is listening to patients, but what we hear also then will require another set of actions. And it's so it's a fine line that we play is with pharma coming into patient conversations, but there has to be some sort of middle ground where pharma can start to support patient communities in a way that provides the facts and doesn't and dispels the opinions and myths that are going on. I think that pharma has invested so much behind information and resources to patients, and patients are really unaware of a lot of the resources that are available to them. A couple of years ago, Phreesia did a report that said I think 23% of patients are aware, only 23% of patients are aware of the information available to them and the resources. So to your point, like if pharma could somehow involve themselves in patient conversations and communities and let them know about resources that are available. I think it's been a tricky way of building in a traditional way of building, building the resources for patients to come, but patients are seeking out other patients for support and advice also. So how do we start to change that direction and support with parameters and requirements that are in place with pharma and healthcare organizations overall?
Definitely. And always there's the HIPAA compliancy, but
Yes.
we're already prepared with that for mostly, hopefully, with the regulatory stuff. So I think that that gives pharmaceutical companies an interesting point. I said this to Ian, I'll say it again. There's online, it's come with receipts, and they can. They've the ones, they're the ones that have done the research. I mean, they're the ones that are going to be the best people to tell you how to use their product, adverse effects, if that's normal or not, things like that. Because while, sharing opinions or finding out if, oh yeah, I did get headaches when I first started taking that, or oh, I was kind of nauseous for the first week of taking that. That's great, but medical, it's like you were saying before, it's important to go to those verified sources. Talk to your doctor, talk to the people who make the stuff, because they're the ones that have the education behind it. And medical care is an art form. It changes for everybody.
Absolutely. One person's experience does not represent everyone. And that's why we've been through the medicines go through the clinical trials to get in all the stages to get where they are. And that's where the misinformation can be very scary because you have opinions and yet we need to look at the whole population health effect. And that's where we want to make sure that we just don't listen to one opinion, but you can take it as an awareness to then seek the validated information.
Absolutely, I totally agree. So we just scratched the surface of this, so that's a great little segue. How and why is pharma increasingly turning to peer-to-patient platforms to educate patients, as well as relationships with trusted patient communities and pharmacies?
I think as we were just discussing, I think the power of the human connection in a world that's so digital really helps to cut through the noise and unoverwhelm the patients, if you will. I think that we can get lost in so many different areas of finding information and to just cut right through it, to have a conversation directly with a patient, to really listen and understand the level of which a patient is where they need the information, making it relevant to the patient. Not every patient needs to be sent all the information, and there's little chunks of it that might be more worthwhile in understanding kind of what's needed at what time. I mean, focusing in the beginning onboarding patients is super important as we see that the medication adherence lasts a lot longer when you have the right setup to patients as they're onboarding. A peer to patient creates a validated, trusted rapport. It's like a mentorship, if you will, where the peers are what JAMA would call lay people, and not white coats, not clinical. And I say this because there's just another recent study done in December with JAMA reported that diabetes patients who had support with a lay person actually saw significant improvements in their overall health and outcomes. And it shows that just having that support and a rapport from a trusted source to just check in and make sure that everything is going in a direction that patient is looking to go in with resources and introducing resources that might be available that patients aren't aware of. A lot of times, peer-to-patient platforms aren't always for those patients that are seeking out. Like a patient community has this fabulous community for patients who are seeking out others like them. And that's a great source to go to feel the support, to ask the questions, but not all patients are going to seek that information. And so a peer-to-patient platform has more of a direct identification of patients and a reason behind the kind of that connection to make. So, for example, with medication refills, through pharmacies want to make sure that patients are getting their refills. Those refill check-in reminders and check-ins offer a whole conversation that can happen in support network for patients. And that's where having a peer-to-patient platform to support that process can then also open up further discussions and develop that trusted rapport that's kind of starts in partnership with pharmacies and then brings in the brand medication sponsored needs as well, but delivered through someone like them, someone who's not a clinician, kind of mitigating that white coat syndrome, so that if there are conditions that you want to talk about that you might. Let's just be honest. Like when you go to your doctor and they ask your habits and your lifestyles, you might kind of curve it a little bit in the healthy way. When you have someone on the phone that's like you might not hold back like that. And that's where this conversation with someone that's a peer really is impactful, and you can develop that rapport to say build the confidence in taking that next step forward.
Yeah, definitely a parasocial relationships that you can say, oh, okay, so this person looks like me, has my body type, lives the lifestyle that I live, and this is working for them. There is also a healthy skepticism of, okay, well, are they being paid to tell me that that this worked and they aren't
True.
actually using it?
I think in today's age, let's hope that they're a little bit more skeptical of information and what's coming into them so that they can start to really filter out the opinions to the facts.
So, speaking of how to filter out things that are fact from fiction, what role should regulatory agencies be playing in the battle against misinformation?
Yeah, that's such a loaded question, right? I am not going to be one to preach with the regulatory agencies. They're going to do what they need to do. But I do believe that, having all this information available is a blessing. I mean, it really, we can't censor information, nor should we curtail the modern technology development to make it accessible. So I think, we have to kind of put that aside. And to the points that we were talking about earlier, it's how do we better focus on education with media literacy, health literacy? What does it look like? What are you collecting? What information are you collecting? Is it fact or is it opinion? And then where do you go to drill further? How do you know the information that you're getting is a verified, validated source, depending on what channel you're seeking it from? And how do you just quickly fact check with the direct sources that are out there? I think that there can be amazing opportunities to diagnose and make people aware of symptoms a lot earlier than we ever were aware of. I mean, I going on TikTok, just looking at, all the different ways of cancer symptoms and patients talking and wanting to get awareness out of what they went through when they found out that they are diagnosed with whatever cancer it is. I mean, getting that public information out is a huge service to public health. But just taking that one person's advice is not going to be a service to you, as a patient. And so it's you don't want to curb or mitigate any of that information flow, but just more focused on how do we put that education into place. And even back in 2021, Murthy was saying, we need to focus this on training and education across all key stakeholders to make sure that we have ways to validate our information.
Jennifer, I have so enjoyed our conversation. This was such a great way to start my week.
Oh,
You so much for joining me today.
Oh, my pleasure. It's been, we could go on forever. I feel like we're just scratching the surface
Yeah,
here.
well, I would love to have a future conversation, of course. Maybe we can, in a couple of months, we can reconvene and see where we've gone since then.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Pharmaceutical Executive Podcast, where we take you behind the headlines to provide expert tips from industry leaders. Remember, you can always find us on the web at pharmexec.com, on Facebook under Pharmaceutical Executive Magazine, on X at PharmExec, and on Instagram and Threads at PharmExecutive. The views on this podcast do not reflect those of MJH Life Sciences, our parent company, or our advertisers. For editorial questions or to get in touch with our editors, please email us at pharmexec@mjhlifesciences.com. And for sponsorship opportunities, please go to pharmexec.com/advertise. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you next time.